Duxbury is probably the Cadillac of Braille translators. Goes for a price of $5.95, I believe, at this point, if you're buying it new. Upgrades, if you were running a previous version, will cost you $2.95. Now, I guess the first question that everybody is going to ask, if they haven't asked it already, is why would we want to pay so much money for a Braille translator? Maybe you wouldn't, but here's the thing. Being the Cadillac, there are many things that this translator does correctly that other ones will not do. I don't know if you've ever put your JAWS translator into grade 2. You'll be disheartened by the results, and the reason I said disheartened is because that's one of the words it doesn't translate correctly. It translates it as D-I-S-H sign E-A-R sign T-E-N sign E-D sign. Yeah, disheartened. Yes, and I don't know what it does with disheveled. I haven't actually looked. But you see, that is one of the problems that some of the lesser translators don't address, because one of the rules in Braille says that if the contraction sign crosses a syllable, you have to ignore it as a contraction. So an SH is an SH only if it doesn't cross a syllable, and in disheartened, it does. So it ain't supposed to do that, but it does. Duxbury, on the other hand, does it flawlessly. And that's one of the great virtues in Duxbury. It's been around since probably about the mid-70s, started out in the world as a program to be run on mainframes, eventually worked its way onto PCs when PCs were running not what we think of as PCs, but running a system called CPM. At that time, you could get Duxbury on 8.5-inch disks, if you can ever imagine an 8.5-inch disk. Eventually, it migrated to 5-inch floppies. Then it went to 3.5-inch floppies, and then it went to PC format, and finally, after many, many years, it went to Windows. But the thing that Duxbury has always had from the time it started, it had the most incredible translation engine ever, because Joe Sullivan is just plain a genius. I don't know how else to say it. The man is incredible at what he does. He was able to, and that translator is being updated from time to time. I see things on the Duxbury list where somebody runs into a problem where there was some fictional character whose name escapes me now, but the thing, Aragon, E-R-A-G-O-N, and apparently for that one, it should not translate the E-R sign, but it was. So Joe is going to fix that in the next release. He already knows about it, and he said he's going to fix it.
Why? Because Eric is the E-R sign, Aragon.
This came up because somebody didn't want that to be translated as a contraction if it's capitalized. I don't know. It was a real strange thing, but they're gonna change it. When Joe hears of things that are wrong, he fixes them. And sometimes maybe he even fixes things that aren't wrong. I don't know. We'll see. Back in the bad old days, or the good old days, depending on your point of view, which to me means DOS and pre-DOS, Duxbury was a series of programs, and they all used what are essentially ASCII text files. Now, not all of them had the extension of .txt, which is what we like to think of text files. Some of them had BRU extensions, which was Braille unformatted, and I forget what some of the others were. But the point is, you started out with a .txt file that you created in an editor like Notepad, or whatever your favorite text editor at that time was, and there were many of them, because at that point there weren't too many word processors. You took that file, you inserted all the codes you needed. If you wanted a paragraph, you put in a dollar P code, and at that point, all of the codes were dollar codes, and I'll talk a little more about what codes are and why they're there eventually. You put all that stuff in your text file. You would run it through the first program in the Duxbury series, and it would turn it into unformatted Braille. And then you would take that file, and you'd run it through another program, and it would turn it into formatted Braille. And that was your final output, which was BRF, which is why we use that extension today, Braille formatted, and that was the stuff that you copied to your embosser. That's the way it worked. Well, things have come up in the world. Duxbury's come up in the world since then, and they now have a user interface that looks and feels sort of like a word processor, because in essence, a translator really has to do two things. A translator obviously translates Braille. It also formats Braille. Now, what do I mean when I say format? Well, several things. The first thing, of course, and the obvious one, is you have this issue of line length. There is no way that you're going to get between 80 and 120 characters on a Braille line, unless, of course, you reduce the Braille to a size that no one can read. So we don't do that. The widest page which is to say 11 by 11 paper, and we're not going to talk about the 14 by 11 because nobody has any of that anyway. So 11 by 11 and a half paper is 40 characters across, 25 lines down. Now, some people will try to get 26 and 27, but the I guess it's the BANA standard for that now is 25. And as far as I'm concerned, that looks pretty good. I have no problem with that standard because it's you're not reading right up on the perforations of the page, and you've got a little bit of room on either side so that you can do binding and stuff like that. Some of this, of course, depends on the embosser you have. Today we have a Romeo Attaché, and the Romeo doesn't do wide paper. The Romeo does narrow paper. Well, as Steve said that, he was looking at the paper because...
Well, what I have is 8.5 by 11.
Then that's what we're doing.
Which is what we're doing today.
Right.
I do think it actually does.
The Romeo does do? Okay.
Yeah, I looked after I talked to you.
What? Okay, but it does now. And I see that the Romeo has had a facelift from the days that I saw it. It looks a lot more like the way they're fashioning the Juliets now, which is a nice sloped front and you know, a little cover that flips up. And formatting lines is an issue. That's the biggest issue in Braille. And that also leads to some of the things that you have to worry about when you start translating documents that are meant to be put on wider paper. I mean, the first obvious part of translation is you got to get it into Braille, which means you have to get from uncontracted Braille to contractions. You have to obviously change the letters so that you see the contraction signs and all of that. And the Braille translator does that. And Duxbury has been doing that since its inception, which means it does an incredible job of that.
Does anybody not know what a Braille contraction is?
I don't.
One of the ways that you make Braille a little bit smaller, because Braille, no matter what you do, Braille is going to be bigger than print. It just can't help it. The letters are taller, they're wider. So one of the things that was done was to come up with letter combinations that we could put into one cell. Things like SH, GH, TH, THE. And then you have each letter of the alphabet except for A, I, and O, which also stands for contraction. So B is but, C is can, D is do, E is every, F is from, G is go, H is have, J is just, K is knowledge, because there were a lot of religious folks and they had knowledge heavy in their minds, I guess. L is like, M is more, N is not, P is people, Q is quite, rather, so, that, us, very, will, it, figure that one out, X for it, don't know why, U and as, which I guess if you say it as, makes sense. That's not the way I usually say it, but what do I know?
How come they didn't use the O? Just a dumb
word. Because there is a word that is O, and that's the poetic O, you know, rest ye, O my soul kind of thing. So... Now, we say O-H, but there is that word O, and therefore they couldn't...
You see it, right.
And so they couldn't use that one as a contraction. So that's essentially the contractions, and there are others, but, you know, there are the ones that start with a .5, like mother, father, here, you know. So the Braille translator has to do all of that stuff. It also has to deal with the issue of capitalization, because if a letter is capitalized in Braille, the way you indicate that in literary Braille is to put a .6 before the letter. So now you have, in addition to just the one-for-one correspondences, you have this whole issue of that some things will take up two cells and some only take up one. So the translator has to be smart enough to deal with that. Then in addition to all of that, and then of course you have that syllable stuff that I was telling you about earlier, where if a contraction crosses a syllable, it can't be used as a contraction, so you have to know when to do that. And again, Duxbury does all of that, and it does it real nicely. Those are some of the translation issues. I don't want to get too tangled up in that. And, of course, this is only for English. Now, there are tables for each language, and Duxbury has tables for Swahili and Finnish and Polish and Norwegian and Afrikaans and, I don't know, Spanish and Portuguese French. And French and
German.
Yeah, you're right.
Is Russian in the same program, or is there another version?
No, Russian is in there now. I don't know if it used to be, because I haven't had much chance to use that. In my daily life, when I'm not doing demos for Vibug and when I'm not updating the web, which is almost all of the time that I'm not updating the web, I run a Braille transcription business called Genco Productions. And right now, our biggest production is the ILA catalog, 2006 catalog. In the things that I do, I don't get to use the Russian tables much. And I don't get to use Hebrew, and I don't get to use... I think they even have Chinese and Vietnamese in there, too.
How about Greek?
I believe that they do. There is probably a list somewhere of all the tables that are supported, but to be honest with you, I haven't looked at it, and I don't want to get real deeply into it in this room because we could probably spend the next 3 or 4 hours just talking about the tables and all of what's in them. What I want to move on to now is the other formatting issues. We talked about lines. We haven't talked about spaces.
Would you set up the word processor in advance to tell it 40 characters, 25 lines, so that you have some sense of the page breaks while you're typing the original document?
No, that's exactly what you don't want to do. And the reason you don't want to do that is because even if you did it, let's say that you actually, now what Jeff is proposing, in case anybody didn't hear it, is to fix the word processor that you're working in. So say you're producing a document in Microsoft Word, you tell it, put 25 lines on a page, put 40 characters on a line. If you did that, that would work fine until you translated. As soon as you translated, now your formatting would be all screwed up because you have contractions that you didn't have there before. You have words that used to take up 5 spaces that now take up 2 or 1. And so all of a sudden, your nice formatting goes out the window. So you can't really do the formatting until after you've done the translation. The next thing that we have to worry about in formatting is spaces. And Duxbury, in its default mode, says that you will never have more than 1 space between characters. So even if you do, they will all be compressed to 1 space. So, you know, normally you have the convention that you have 2 spaces between sentences. Well, in Braille, that's 1 space, and as far as Duxbury is concerned, it turns it into 1 space. There is a code that you can put in that will tell it not to do that, but we very seldom do that because if we did, Braille would take up a lot more space than it already does, and it takes up enough space as is.
I would actually like to know what that is, because I often have to print Braille for people who cannot... it has to have it separated.
Are you saying that you always want there to be 5 spaces?
Yeah. Well, no, or 1 space. Like, I want between letters, for instance, I want between, in a word, I want the letters separated by 1 space, and then I usually...
Use two spaces for... Okay, so... Yeah. I think what you're looking for can be accomplished with embosser settings, actually, believe it or not. On my Juliet, there is a setting in the embosser that says relaxed spacing. What they mean is that instead of the standard, I think it's 1/10 of an inch between words, and I'm not sure about that, so,
mm-hmm.
you know,
okay.
it'll make it different. It won't make it 1 full space, and you probably wouldn't want to quite do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, if you did, you would be expanding the Braille out to something huge.
I haven't done it. It's just for people who will use it for labeling, but who have neuropathy and are really not able to, you know, they... And so, never mind. Just
It's a good question. I'm not... Sure, I know the answer to it,
yeah,
though.
But,
I think it's an embossing issue rather than a translator issue. Although you did remind me of something else, and that is that Duxbury is capable of producing Braille that is double spaced, so that you can have a blank line between each of the lines that you have. So that's another way that you can increase it.
Does it do jumbo Braille?
Duxbury itself doesn't. Well, I say no. The embossers will do jumbo Braille. It would be the same encoding. I think Duxbury would rely... But what would change is that, say, instead of getting 40 characters to a line, you might get 30. So you might have to change your page size in Duxbury to tell it only put 30 characters on a line. And then you'd have to change a setting in the embosser that says do this in jumbo Braille. And I know the Juliet has that setting. I don't know if the Romeo does. I would guess that it does because enabling... is pretty good about all the settings that exist in one embosser pretty much exist in every other one. Now, there are obviously some things. The Romeo, for instance, will not do interpoint. The Juliet will, and so that's an issue. So anyway, we have the spacing kinds of considerations. Do we want blank lines between things? Do we not? We also have page numbering, and Duxbury will do that. Duxbury will do things like headings so that you can have your headings centered. You can, if you want to produce a title page, for instance, where everything is centered, you can do that.
Will it do the print page, the line that often appears in a book that indicates a print page?
Sure will. You have to insert the right code for it to do that, and I don't think it's an automatic process yet, although there is a table, or there is a template that I believe you can use when you create documents in Word that will do what it needs to do to put those codes in. I haven't used it because, again, I don't do too many textbooks. I do a lot more literary stuff where we don't care what the print pages are. We care about the Braille ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now that MLS is doing all books with the print page indicators, I don't know if that means that, you know, Duxbury will change or what.
It certainly means that there'll be a template set up to do that kind of stuff, and I think that's the intent of the BANA template that now comes with Duxbury. There is a BANA template that, I think it's called BANA Braille template, that you use when you import documents that are created in Word, and depending on what styles and things have been used in Word, those things will be honored by the template and the codes will be put in. So some of this is changing and we'll see, you know, where it all goes. But
there's an option called Mark Print Page Breaks under Global Word Importer Settings, and if you check that, then it will...
That's right.
Assuming you have Word installed, it will go and look for the Print Page Breaks.
Yes, it'll... And
put in LEA codes.
Well, yeah, I think that... The which? The textbook?
You know, to choose textbook, you know, it's one of the templates.
Yeah, it may very well.
And that's, again, one of the importing things, you know, because it asks you, what do you want to import to?
Yeah, when you
tell it literary braille, then it ignores the print pages. But if you tell it textbook, I think it puts in those, the row of, you know, .36s with the number sign and the print page at the end of the line and all that.
Yeah, I think it does. But again, Ted, I haven't used that, so I can't. Really tell you whether it does or doesn't. But that gets into a whole business of the things that can be done in a template, and I could get into any one of these aspects of it, but if we do, we'll be here till sometime next week, and there'll be a lot of people that'll probably have dropped off to sleep. It's a complicated business, but templates control things like where the page numbers are on the page. Do we want them in the top right corners? Do we want them at the bottom? Do we want them on odd pages only, like they used to do in all the APH books, which is the way I personally like them set up? Do we want them on every page, which is now more standard practice? Again, because of the fact that so many people are brailing things in public schools, you get a lot more down and dirty stuff that's happening, and people don't try to make the braille as nice and refined, because again, the perception among the public is that if you have a braille translator, you put the print file in, you get the braille file out, you do the hokey pokey and you wiggle all about, and that's all that happens. Well, I am here to tell you that if you really want Braille done right, it's still a much more labor-intensive process than that. And essentially the reason is because computers don't think. Computers do what you tell them to, and if you've told them everything correctly, it's fine. But if you haven't, heaven help you if you haven't.
Let's say I have a PDA, and what I mean by that is the PDA for the blind people use with a Braille translator in it.
So you're thinking of something like a Braille Note or
a Braille Note, a PacMate, or even a Braille Light, or something like that.
Okay.
If I have that, or if my clients have something like that,
mm-hmm.
is there a reason, unless they are doing things like what you are doing, or if they're like mass producing Braille, is there a reason to still get a Duxbury?
Yes,
I would say yes.
Want me to speak to that, because I just bought it.
Sure.
Literally a month ago. The reason is this: sometimes, even though you have a note taker,
mm-hmm.
you want hard copy Braille.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sometimes,
but can't you then use an embosser?
You can connect the Braille Note or the note taker to the embosser sometimes. Now, here's the problem, and we're really getting into shaky ground here. A lot of the newer Braille note takers do not have parallel ports. The Braille printers do have USB. In fact, the Romeo's got it right now. And in fact, if we ever get that far today, he said, desperately hoping that we wouldn't, I will be trying to make it talk to the computer with a USB port. But I have run into issues. I have tried to use a Braille Note, connecting it to a Juliet with USB, and it didn't work. It's a little iffy right now. My deepest cynicism says that the reason it doesn't work is because humanware, in their infinite wisdom, didn't finish doing their homework. In my more charitable moments, I say things like, and of course picture me now with a big shovel in my hand and wearing high boots, they are coming into a new area of technology, they haven't quite got it all worked out, yada yada, world without end, amen.
There's another reason too, though, I think, to buy Duxbury,
mm-hmm.
and that is that if you want to be able to create files, Braille files, and you want to then be able to send them to somebody else, the note takers that are available are still pretty kludgy when it comes to email. They're pretty kludgy when it comes to the internet. They work a little better than they used to, but there's still some limitations. And I would say it's a lot easier to take, to get Duxbury, make sure it's really formatted correctly, and then send it on. And you can send it in, you know, you can send it in a variety of different file types off to whoever needs it.
Let me give you an example, say from a different point of view, but that supports the same thing. I have been in the position in the last couple of weeks where, because of some mechanical and technical failures for a student of Marsha's, I've been brailing some of her stuff for her. Now, it's very nice that I can get the files in Duxbury format, and I just open them up and send them off to the embosser, and they come out nicely. Even if I get them formatted for wide paper, and I decide to braille them on narrow paper, I can tell Duxbury to do that, and it will reformat everything, putting the lines, you know, broken where they're supposed to be, putting page numbers at the top where they're supposed to be. If I just took that BRF file from the note taker, I'd be stuck with whatever format the kid produced. And so if they have a 30-character embosser and I have a 40 and they want it in wide format, now I'm really stuck. So the purpose of the translators in Braille notes and in other note takers is really just a down and dirty rendering of Braille. So if you want it done right, you probably want to have something on your computer. I don't fully rely on note takers to do everything that we want them to do, and certainly everything that they claim to do. And I would say, even for a client, you know, eventually you want to be able to have a computer, even if you just want to print things, because I'm here to tell you that sometimes the way you get stuff printed off of a note taker is a little strange too. If you're trying to do something that's really refined and you want it to look right, take it off the note taker, get it onto a computer, and do your major power work there. It's kind of like trying to use a pair of roller skates when you really need a car, you know. It's the roller skates will get you there, but I wouldn't trust them to do any heavy lifting.
A lot of times when we braille on the embosser, you occasionally get a line with only one word on it, and the rest of the line is just blank. You
know, okay.
And it's just a waste of
absolutely
space. Is there a reason why that happens?
Yes, there is, actually, and it's a pretty easy one. But you're not going to like it. Here's what happens. People prepare documents in word processors a lot of times, and I'm assuming that a lot of the documents you braille were prepared in something like Word. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. What people often do is they will type, and they use a word processor just like they used the old typewriter, which meant that as the character comes to the end of the screen, they whack away at the Enter key. Okay? Now, that doesn't make a mess when you look at the document on the screen, but it makes an awful mess when you import it into a translator, because here's what happens. Duxbury thinks every time you hit the Enter key, that is essentially the end of a paragraph in a word processor. So what Duxbury is now seeing is little paragraphs of maybe 75 or 80 characters long. And if you had a line, say you were doing this on narrow paper, so you got 30 characters across the line. You got an 80-character line. What's going to happen? You're going to get 30, you're going to get another 30, and you're going to get 20. So now you got two normal-sized lines and a short line. And then you go on. And probably what will also happen is that your next line, which is essentially the start of a new paragraph as far as the Duxbury is concerned, is now indented by two spaces. So you get all these short lines, you know, breaking at places where they are not supposed to break. The answer to that, and it's actually a good answer not only for Duxbury, but for people using a word processor themselves, and I'll tell you why in a second if it hasn't dawned on you. The answer to that is you only hit the Enter key when you have a real, honest-to-God reason to break the line. Not the reason that we're running out of characters on the screen, because the word processor takes care of that. You can type for the rest of your life in a word processor, and it'll keep wrapping the text. That's what they call it, wrapping, when you go from the one line to the next. And the word processor, just like Duxbury, knows where to put those. But if you start introducing hard returns into the text, you're going to confuse everything. And here's what happens with a word processor when you do that. You type a document, and say you do it in 12-point, and it looks real good. And then somebody says, wait a minute, we need to blow this up to 16. Now all of a sudden, that nice formatting that you had isn't there anymore, because you're getting less characters to the line. And now you're also still getting those hard returns. So now you start seeing the same thing on the word processor screen that you saw in Duxbury. You're getting short lines when you shouldn't. So the real reason not to do that, aside from the fact that it screws up Braille, which, you know, they may or may not care about, is that it also screws up life for them. And you'll hear sighted people say this all the time. Damn it, I did this document in 12-point, now I blew it up and it's all formatted wrong. What the heck am I going to do? So I guess what I'm saying is that the reason it happens is because I would say at least 80 to 90% of people who use word processors do not know how to use them correctly. And they do things like when they want to center text, they don't use the centering command. They space, 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 tab, tab, space, space, tab, tab, tab. And so then, now, going along with what I just told you, can anybody think of what happens when you do that and then render the document in Braille?
And it sees where it's centered, but it's centering all of a sudden changes.
Well, is it centered anymore?
No.
Exactly. It's absolutely not.
It just tabs.
You might actually see a line that started in column 60, which, as far as Braille is concerned, if you're using white paper, is a blank line plus 20 into the next line. So now not only do you have things not centered anymore, but you've also got a whole bunch of extra spacing in there because of all the tabs and spaces and stuff. Now the spaces, if it just did spaces, Duxbury would compress that into one space. So now it isn't centered either. Now it's over against the left margin except indented by one. And that's not right. But with tabs, Duxbury will treat tabs differently than your word processor did. Say your word processor is set up to do 5 spaces per tab. Well, Duxbury is set up to do 2. So now you got another problem. But if you use the real centering code, and Word has a centering code, then when you import it into Duxbury, Duxbury has something called a word importer. And the word importer is intelligent enough to know what codes were used in Word, and it honors them. So if a heading was centered in Word, it will now be centered correctly in Braille. And this was somewhat of a problem when we took stuff from text editors like Notepad and imported them into Duxbury. But the problem there was that you had all these spaces. And Duxbury does have a text file importer, and it tries to deal intelligently with some of that stuff, but it doesn't always work. Mostly what you need to do in word processing when you're using a word processor is, for instance, one of the biggest things that people can do to avoid a lot of that stuff is don't hit the carriage return until you're at the end of a paragraph. Then hit the carriage return. Don't hit the carriage return unless you really, truly do want to go to the next line, not just because the screen is filling up. There are manuals and there are things that tell you what the keys are. And there are hotkeys for some of these things. For instance, centering in Word is Control E. And anybody who has taken any kind of word processing courses will know that. But the problem is, because you can get away with, you know, what they call what you see is what you get, or WYSIWYG, people just kind of watch the way it looks on the screen, and however they got it that way is fine. But of course,
you can't watch it somehow.
That's right. We get more conscious of that because we don't know what's happening on the screen anyway. And even if we did, you know, we start changing font sizes and doing all that other stuff. And we also, most of us know that there are brailing issues that happen. But a lot of sighted people never get trained to use word processors. They simply sit down and start typing. So, and I don't know what the solution for that is. I mean, I'd like to take the hard line and say, you know what, people are just going to have to learn to use word processors. But I'm enough of a realist to know that they don't. And so I guess if you're finding these things, that you maybe then have to educate people a little bit and say, look, if you want to center something, use a control, you know, type the line and then use a control E. If you want me to see a paragraph, don't put a carriage return in the middle of it. Don't hit the Enter key in the middle of it. Don't use a tab at the beginning of the paragraph, because if you do, Duxbury will indent 2 extra spaces and you'll have your paragraph starting in cell 5 instead of cell 3. But it's a slow and painful process to get people to understand that this is what they have to do. Because, again, most of them don't really understand what a word processor is.
Okay, I always thought it was Control E and then you type the type.
You can do either one.
You highlight the line, then you can type your Control E.
Control, yeah.
You do have to highlight it.
If you
type it afterwards.
No, I don't think you do.
And everything else will get centered.
Right.
And then
it'll go crazy. It'll start going down a page.
And sometimes you put an email address in the document. How do you fix it to computer Braille and then put it back to Braille too?
Word or in Duxbury?
In Duxbury.
There is a code called, actually there's a couple of ways to do it. One is by using the code CBI. CBI tells Duxbury that from now on until you tell it differently, everything that you type is going into computer Braille. It also puts in the beginning computer Braille indicator. And then when you want to switch, you use the code TXI, which says text. We're going back to text, but with an indicator. Now, the easier way to do it in Duxbury is to use what they call a style. And a style is a group of codes that has been defined for you for a reason. And one of the styles in Duxbury is something called comp inline. And so what you do is you take the text that you want to have in computer Braille, you highlight it, and then you do an F8, which is your button for applying style. It brings up the list of styles, and you either arrow down or you type the letter C, and you'll see a style called comp inline. You hit enter, and it takes the code, it puts the CBI code at the beginning, It puts the TXI code at the end of the highlighted material. Does it all for you. So that's the real easy way to do it. Now, in Word itself, it turns out, there is a way that you can guarantee that your email addresses and your web addresses will go into Duxbury correctly. What you do is you create a hyperlink, which is probably a good thing to do in Word anyway, because if you're doing that, you're actually helping people who are reading that document, because if they click on that address, they'll go right to it.
Right.
Or if they click on it and it's an email address, it'll open up their email program and they can send a message. And if you do that, Duxbury's Word Importer honors hyperlinks, and it puts the comp inline style right where it belongs. And the way you do hyperlinks in Word, for those who don't know it, is Control-K. This is one use of codes, one use of the codes that we used to call dollar codes, and we now, because Duxbury is in Windows now, it's much more like a word processor, so in some cases, we have these things called styles that we can use. We also have a code list that we can pull up. I mean, in the bad old days, what you had to do is sit there with your manual and thumb through the manual until you found the code you want. And that's how I learned Duxbury. And some of us know what that was all about. You know, and I got to tell you, there are some wild and crazy codes in Duxbury. One of the greatest ones is the one that they use for making the dots that you see in a table of contents or on a restaurant menu. And that thing is so long and complicated that I can't even remember it on a good day. It's, let's see if I can remember it. I think it's FR... No, it's, well, that's part of it. But it's more than that. It's FRP dot... tilde quote, I think.
Only if you want to specify that it's a different character in print than it is in Braille. If you just want to make sure it's a .5 in Braille and you don't care about the print, you do it every day.
Okay. But it also turns out that in Duxbury, because of the new and improved interface, there is, if you use a Shift-Alt-F7, it just puts the code in there for you and you don't have to worry about it. And again, you know, the problem is that because this is all code-driven, and all word processors are, by the way, Microsoft Word is too. It's just that you never see those codes because you don't have to. You start typing, and their word processor actually thinks it knows what you're doing, and it you know, attempts to come up with the right code. If you change fonts, it may go to a different style. And all of these styles are mapped to the Duxbury Word Importer, so it knows what paragraph style should look like, and it uses the paragraph style in Duxbury to make that happen. Let me talk for a minute about the installation in Duxbury, and I'm not going to talk about it long. One of the new things that they've done in 10.6 is they are now using a standard Microsoft Windows installer. That's the good news. The bad news is that when you put in the disk, instead of getting what you would expect to get, you get this web page that's got all kinds of links and crap all over it. And one of the choices is the install, at which point you then finally get to the installer where you need to be. So if you're installing Duxbury for the first time, don't panic. Find the link, click on it, and then panic.
There's another thing, too, which is, and I got this when I installed it on my computer, it wants to allow ActiveX controls because it shows all this, I think, because it probably shows some interesting stuff on the... and so you... you may be asked if you want to allow it to show those ActiveX controls.
Yeah.
The other alternative is, instead of just going to that web page, is, and I actually have done this, go to explore the CD and then just find
yeah.
the file.
The problem is, though, that sometimes when you put the CD in, it's already off and running before
you
ever get a chance to do that.
If you hit escape really fast, sometimes you can avoid that.
Isn't there another way to do that?
The shift key.
Yeah, I was just going to say, holding down the shift key is supposed to keep that from happening.
Yeah. So that's another way you can use to explore, just explore the CD and highlight the file. And that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Now, when you say a Microsoft installer, that specifically is not the Install Shield installer. That's Microsoft's own installer.
Install Shield used to be what they called it, but I don't think they're calling it Install Shield anymore, are they?
No, they're trying to establish, go through the internet, actually. So.
Yeah.
I don't even know if this goes through the internet. I think this is just... It's the latest and the greatest installer from Microsoft, and what it means is that JAWS does a pretty good job of reading things, and the install is not too complicated anyway. I mean, it basically now asks you if you want the full install of Duxbury, or if you want the typical install, or if you want to customize it, and they even tell you which one is recommended, and they say the typical is the one. If you do the full install, you're going to get all the different language tables. I mean, you get Chinese and Swahili and, you know, all that stuff, which I'm sure we are all going to just be using all the time. You get the install done, and you run Duxbury, and the first thing that you want to do is you want to set up the embosser, because if you don't do that, there isn't a whole lot of point in having the translator if you can't emboss what you finally translate. What you have here when you start Duxbury is basically a blank window. It has the typical file, you know, the menu bar, which has...
Menu bar, file, edit unavailable, view unavailable, layout unavailable, document unavailable, global.
Okay, now you'll notice that most of those options are unavailable right now, and the reason is because you don't have a document open, and there's no point in talking about editing if you don't have a document open. There's no point in talking about view if you don't have a document open. So the only ones that are available are the global and the help, and right now we haven't got to the point where we need help yet.
Menu, global menu, embosser setup.
Okay, now there are several things on the global menu, the first one of which is the embosser setup. I'm just going to go down through it so you see what it is.
Printer setup.
Printer setup. You can print things from Duxbury as well as emboss them. You can do two things. You can work with the file that you import into Duxbury as a DBT print file, or if you imported a Duxbury Braille file, you can back translate it and actually come up with a print file if you didn't have one to start with. I don't really like to get into back translation too much because back translation is a slippery road. It's a real slippery slope to go down because there are so many contextual things that happen in Braille, and there's no way for the computer to evaluate that when it goes back to translating. So, for instance, you don't know the difference. You don't know whether you're looking at 1/4 or 1st4. And the back translator usually makes a choice, and at least 50% of the time it's the wrong one. So I don't really recommend using any Braille translator's back translator and taking it seriously. I would be, if you're going to do that, make sure that you then go in and clean up the document a lot, because you're going to need to. And that's the other thing to remember, that Duxbury and all the other translators are really intended to get stuff from print to Braille. I mean, that's the goal. They are organized kind of around the fact that people who use them will be reading print. I mean, as it happens now, because we have screen readers and stuff, we can use them too. But, you know, it's not necessarily for everybody to do it that way. All right, so you got printer setup. You got...
Autosave options.
Okay, now, one of the new features in Duxbury 10.6 is that it saves your document from time to time, like every other good word processor should. Duxbury has been a little bit slow about getting their interface up to the speed of most word processors. The big, and I do mean huge, revolutionary thing that Duxbury did when it came into the Windows world was it actually has a user interface. Because before, remember I told you, it was all just text files. You ran a program with one file as the input that produced an output file. You ran a different program with that one and finally produced your Braille file, which you copied to the embosser. If you were really slick, you could produce a batch file that would do all that for you. You know, but it took a while because it was starting up different programs and, you know, they all had to load and all this crazy stuff. So when we got into the Windows world, Duxbury came up with a user interface, but it has taken a long time to get that user interface up to a speed that most of us are used to with other word processors. And one of the big changes now in 10.6 is this autosave business. It used to be, if you were typing along and your computer crashed, so sad. You didn't have anything, unless you had remembered to save your file from time to time. But if you didn't, and most of us don't, you were dead, and you just had to go back and start over. Now Duxbury saves the file, and you have some settings that you can tell it how often, you can tell it where you want those saved, and by default, it saves them in a folder in My Documents, which is, I think, called something like DBT Save or something like that. It's not a folder you usually have to worry about, but it's there if you need it, if you have to go back. And in addition to the fact that we now have this autosave feature, Duxbury also has a better recovery feature, so that should your computer crash, you can actually get back into Duxbury and have it recover the file you were working on. Okay, continuing with the menu.
Default views.
Default views. Now that tells Duxbury what kind of way that you want to look at documents on the screen. Again, this is kind of a visual thing. If you are in a Braille document, you probably want a Braille font, so that you can see what, in fact, the dots are looking like. And that's one of the things you can change in views. You can also change the size. Well, I'm not sure if you can change the size of the print font you're using, but a lot of this stuff we're not going to worry about too much anyway. You can also determine whether you, when Duxbury starts, if you want the codes to be visible or not. And when you get into doing a document, it's often a very good idea to turn on codes so that you can find out exactly what Duxbury thinks you got, because sometimes it's the only way you're ever going to fix some of these problems that I told you you sometimes get. So, all right, we got that menu.
Internationalization.
Internationalization, I have a feeling, is only relevant if you're going to start playing around with foreign languages, and I don't want to get into it here because I don't want to admit how little I know about it, actually, is why we don't want to get into it here.
Fonts,
again, what kind of font do you want to use? You want to use Braille, you want to use print, you want to use some of that stuff. Again, we're not going to worry about it.
View preferences.
View preferences, this is a new feature, and I'm going to go into it just for a second to see what it tells me.
Limit menus, zero, global, view preferences, dialog, margin, bell position, edit, zero.
Ah, one of the new features in Duxbury is for those who like to work in Braille files, you can now have a margin bell. I'm not sure why you'd want to do this, and I'll tell you why I say that, because if you're letting Duxbury do what it's supposed to, it will wrap the screen properly. But for those who just absolutely feel duty-bound to hit that carriage return at cell 38 instead of 40, you can set up a Braille margin. And the margin thing, the bell, is actually a bell from the Perkins Braille Writer. They recorded a file called margin.wave, and that's what's in it. So you get to hear the Perkins bell. Again, that's not something I use very much because I don't do much direct Braille entry. I start out with a print file, clean up what I have to there, and then let Duxbury translate. But there are times and there are places where people want to enter directly in Braille, and you can do that.
Use verbose labels for non-ASCII characters encoded view checkbox not checked.
Okay, now what this is babbling about is that, let's say you get something like an A acute or something like that, it will tell you that it's an A acute instead of just leaving you to, well, actually, that's a bad example, but there are some characters that don't show up in the things that JAWS will render or your screen reader will render, and at that point, Duxbury gives you a value that'll say it's, you know, DESI 283 or ASCII 158 or something like that, which at least allows you to know that the code is there, and if you're geeky enough, you can probably, you know, figure out what it actually does.
Or if it's like a Greek alpha, it'll say Brace Alpha.
Right, right.
Instead of actually displaying the alpha sign, which might be okay, except that JAWS, or at least old versions, won't read it, so you might use that.
Yeah. I think in the later versions of JAWS, it's a little bit better about that, and I don't know about Window Eyes, whether Window Eyes reads those things or not. Anyway, that's something you can turn on and off.
Show cursor locator when document opened or translated. Checkbox checked.
Okay, the cursor locator. If you hold the shift key down when you're in a file, Duxbury will put a little ring around where the cursor is. Doesn't do us much good, and our Braille displays don't care, but for sighted people, I guess that's a really good thing so that they can see what, in fact, is happening, you know, where the cursor is on the screen. It also becomes an issue because one of the neat things that you can do now in the newer versions of Duxbury is to, when you translate the file, it will attempt to put your cursor in the new Braille file into approximately the same place you were in the print file. If you're trying to wrestle with something and you're not sure how it's going to look, you can do a little on-the-fly translation. Your cursor will be sitting there in the Braille file right where you were working in the print file, and you can get to see whether what you're doing makes any sense or not. And that's really important if you're playing around with codes and styles and trying to get fancy formatting done. For down and dirty stuff, you won't care. But if you're starting to get into the nitty-gritty of making good, accurate Braille, you may want to do that. In the old days, you used to just have to figure out where you were in the file, and that was that.
It depicts Braille dots visually on the screen. Is that what it's doing?
When you go into the Braille file, yes.
Oh, okay.
And also, in the print file, there is a line down at the bottom of the screen that will show how the file is going to look when you translate it into Braille, and you can turn that on and off. I don't usually turn it on because I'd rather see the whole file translated, but a lot of sighted people like to have it on so they can see what's going to happen when the stuff goes into Braille. But it only shows the line you're working on that bottom line, but it shows it in a Braille font, so you actually get to see the position of the dots. Now, that actually turns out to have a nice side effect, and that is that once you install Duxbury, that font becomes available to you in Word, and if you want to, you can take a bunch of text in Word, select it, and apply the Braille font to it, and now you have actual dots on the page that you can show people. Or for instance, in what I do, I have a Braille chart that I produce where I actually want the dot, you know, the shapes of the dots to appear on the printed page. So I apply that font to the letters that I want to show up in Braille, and it does a nice job of doing that. And I don't even have to work very hard at it.
Show cursor locator when switching views, checkbox checked.
Okay, and show cursor locator when switching views if you're going from the coded view to the non-coded view. One of the reasons, when you turn codes on, you tend to lose your place of where the cursor actually is in the document because you stop seeing the spacing, you just see the codes. So, for instance, if you had a header code, instead of seeing the text centered, when you turn codes on, you will see the codes are encased in red brackets. So you see left bracket HDS, right bracket, the text you want centered, left bracket HDE, which is the ending header code. But it's no longer centered on the screen, so now this cursor locator actually becomes a good thing because it kind of shows you where the cursor really is, so when you start typing, you'll know what you're destroying or fixing.
Was it $ sign with those codes, or was that gone?
That's gone. The codes are now enclosed in left and right brackets. That's something they did when they went into the Windows world. I believe that there is, when you save the file, you can produce a file with those dollar codes in it like they used to be. But unless you're using a real old version of Duxbury, I can't see much point in doing that now because it's all transparent to you. You don't have to go through all that trouble.
Show cursor locator when shift is pushed, checkbox checked.
All right, so now they're telling you when you can show it. You can show it all the time. You can show it when the shift key is checked, and there's some other option which I don't remember, but I don't want to dwell too much on this.
Six key set, edit, FDSJKL.
Okay, now the six key, it is possible in Duxbury to do six key entry of Braille. Again, it's a neat feature if you're working directly in a Braille file, but the issue nowadays is it's getting harder and harder to find keyboards that will let you do that. And it turns out that the good keyboards will not, because the good keyboards have circuitry in them that prevents you from pressing more than one or two keys at a time, and that's because so many people kind of were in such a hurry as they typed that they would press several keys and you'd end up getting crap all over the screen. So the good keyboards don't let you do that. So if you want to do six-key Braille, you're best to look for a cheaper keyboard, which doesn't have that circuitry in it. And it's a crapshoot which one it'll be. You'd almost have to do it on a case-by-case testing of the keyboards to find out.
Okay button.
Okay, and we know what that is.
Cancel
button. We're
going
to cancel this just because I didn't really want to change anything. I'm going to stop playing around with the global menu now, except to set up the embosser.
Menu, global menu, embosser setup. Leaving menus, global embosser setup dialog, trailer device, list box, no target embosser, 1 of 1.
The first time you go into Duxbury, you have no embosser set up, and so you have to add one. So I'll tab.
Trailer device, new button.
Okay, and we need a new trailer device because we don't have one right now.
Global embosser setup dialog, embosser setup, untitled configuration dialog, general page, XEM, DLLV, 1.3 dbt will prompt if this is blank, embosser model, combo box, please select the model, 1 of 73.
Okay, and as you see, you got quite a choice of embossers here, 72 of them at least, and maybe 73. I'm going to go down through the list and try to find the Romeo, and I'm going to take a chance that they do it the way they usually do, which is to label it by manufacturer.
No?
I don't
think.
Well, let's see.
Enabling Braille Bookmaker.
Maybe.
Enabling Braille Express. Enabling Braille Place. Yeah, enabling E.T. Enabling Juliet Classic. Enabling Juliet Pro. Enabling Juliet Pro 60. Enabling Marathon. Enabling Pet 30. Enabling Romeo 2040. Yeah. Enabling Romeo 25. Enabling Romeo Attaché.
And that's the one we want.
If they hadn't put the word enabling, you could have just typed R for Romeo. It would have
correct.
Taken the right
correct. But
better.
I kind of knew that. I mean, I knew that they did it this way because I did the thing of trying to find J for Juliet on my own and whacked away at that key for about an hour because I'm a slow learner, and then I finally figured out that was stupid, so.
Embosser setup, enabling Romeo Attaché dialog, general page, XEM, DLLV, 1.3 dB, configuration location, combo box, current user, 1 of 2.
Okay, now, one of the new things you can do in Duxbury is to configure this so that it's only available to the person who's logged in now, or to all users. And normally I leave it for all users because I never know who's going to be using a computer. I mean, obviously, if you're the only one, then you are the current user, you're the only user. But in schools, for instance, where people log in and you have several different people that might be using a computer, I want the thing available to everybody. So I'm going to make
all
it available
users on this computer.
To all users on the computer. I just arrowed down to do that.
Output options, write to port, radio button checked, 2 of 3.
Okay, now I guess we really want to write to the printer on this. Now, write to port means that you send directly to whatever port you're going to be connected to. The disadvantage of that is if you're embossing a big document, Duxbury just kind of sits there and hangs while it's sending the stuff out to the port. If you send to a printer, you can then take advantage of the Windows print queue, and while Duxbury is sending the document out slowly for your embosser, you can go off and do other things. In your experience, Amy, have you been doing send to port?
No.
Send to printer.
Send to printer. And I'll tell you why. Particularly if you're going to use a USB, which is what we're using today. If you don't send to printer, you then have to remember exactly which USB port it is.
And you don't want to do
and
that.
And you may not remember. And if you have as many on my home computer, I have about 10 different USB devices. So, unless
output
you want
option, send to printer,
that,
radio button check, 1 of 3.
You want to go to send to printer.
Now, they say there are 3 radio buttons, and I'm kind of curious about what that third one
output
is.
Output options, write to port, radio button checked, 2 of 3. Output options, write to file, radio button checked, 3.
You could actually even do that if you wanted to. Have your embosser, instead of going to an embosser, just go to a file. I don't know why in the name of God you'd want to do that, but you can.
Well, send a 7 file to somebody else to put in their real number, maybe.
Yeah, I guess.
Output options, send to printer, radio button checked, 1 of 3. Output options combo box / H175201/Impos1 1 of 2.
What?
I don't know.
What's that?
Why is my computer number coming up?
I don't know.
That's really weird.
/H175201/Impos2.
There are 2 printers apparently on this computer right now. I know what this is. This goes back to one time when I had borrowed the laptop, and those were the 2 printers, the shared printers on my network. When I say printer and I'm talking about Braille things, I really mean embosser, which is a type of, from the point of view of the electronics, it is a type of printer, but it has all kinds of special things that, I mean, it's a lot simpler than most printers are.
Cancel button.
Okay, I'm going to cancel this because...
The Duxbury Braille translator.
You went to global settings and then you went to send
embosser setup.
Embosser setup. Yeah.
Send to printer, right?
Yeah. So we will be doing virtual embossing today. At this point, I don't know how much more I can tell you that I haven't told you. I can talk about some of the things that are new in DBT 10.6. Did I mention the undo feature?
No.
Ah. Undo is one of the greatest things that Duxbury ever put in. Not because there's anything special about undo, but because it was never there before. You know, in the bad old days of version 10.5, which weren't so very old, and previous versions, if you made a mess, you typed in something really complicated and you thought you were getting somewhere, you could never gonna undo it. You had to start over again. Had to reload the file.
How many levels of undo does it do?
I do not know that. I know that it does more than one. I mean, I figure if I get past about 5 or 6, then I'm probably, you know, did something really stupid.
Found new hardware wizard dialogue.
I know that it does more than one. But I don't know how... That's possible. I don't believe it's settable.
Duxbury will do almost anything you want if you know how to do it. But one of the things that was a little tough for it to do in the past was to do an odd-sized form. Have they improved any of that in 10.6?
How are you defining an odd-sized form?
A 3x5 card, say.
I don't really know that because I haven't tried it yet, Ted. I just... You know, and that's a very good question. I just don't know the answer.
Okay.
They say that you can do more customization now with the form sizes. I haven't tried it, though, so I honestly don't know. Okay, so undo is one of the new features. Templates are better than they used to be. I mean, are expanded to include different languages and do different all kinds of things with templates. One of the things that is nice about templates now that didn't used to be, Duxbury has an automatic table of contents generator and has had for a while, actually. It has had that since version 4, I think. And you can now include, if you want to do a customized table of contents, which I almost always do for a couple of reasons. One, I don't want to do the BANA contents where you have the Braille, I mean where you use the print pages. I want to use the Braille pages. I also don't like chapter and page at the head of my contents because I want to be able to do title and page because a lot of the things I do are not chapters. So title and page makes more sense than chapter and page. And I've customized all that stuff in a contents. Now, it used to be that the way you had to do that was you had to manually edit a file in the Duxbury directory, get into Notepad or your favorite text editor, and actually insert the customization you wanted. Now, you can customize the contents and then save that in a template along with a lot of other things so that when you open up a file, it asks you what template you want to use, and you can use the template you've made. Now, like Word documents, a template includes a lot of things. It includes styles. It includes things like how you want the page numbering set up. It might even include part of your embosser setup for a given set of documents. And you can also include this now the table of contents. So you can make your own templates and add styles that were not there. You can remove styles that you know you're never going to use. I have a template that I have set up so that the page numbering only happens on odd pages because that's the way I like it, and I can do that because, you know, the Bonnet police are not going to be at my door anytime soon. Instead of having to do it for every document, when I create a new document, I just use this template, and all that stuff is all set up for me. Just the way I like it. I have my own style for doing computer Braille, because one of the things I don't like about CompInline is that it doesn't put on the word breaking that puts the little 4-5-6 ampersand at the end of a line. So I built a style that has the CBI code, the style that turns on WBCBC, and, you know, that's my style, and I called the style CBC because it means something to me. So all that's part of my template. So that's one of the things that got improved in New Duxbury. They say the JAWS scripts are better. I hope that's true, but you can't prove it on my computer. They don't really work at all. You're supposed to be able to do things like read the location of where you are on the page, but I find the only way I can do that is with the invisible cursor, because when I press the JAWS key, the key that's supposed to read that, which is Alt-9, all it says is coded view, and that doesn't tell me anything, so I don't know what's going on there. It may be with something with 98, it may be that it works better on XP, I just don't know because I don't have a way to test it right now. There are a whole bunch of other new things with improved tables for languages and improved tables for partially contracted Braille, which is one of the things you can set up. You can tell Duxbury to only include certain contractions in the translation. There's an NLS manual somewhere, and what they've done, which is not the way I would do it, but it's the way they did it, is they say you can choose the amount of contractions you want, but it's done by the section numbers in the manual, so you kind of have to know that manual pretty well. And if I had to say that there's one thing that I really think needs to be improved in Duxbury, it's a friendlier user interface for people who aren't familiar with all the esoterica of the codes and all of the good stuff that Joe has done. Joe is a mathematical kind of guy. I mean, everything he writes is sounds like it's a lesson from your algebraic proofs in high school. It's very thorough, it's very detailed, it's very correct, and it's also, for most of us, very frightening. If you take the time to read and understand what he tells you, you will get there. But a lot of us are just too intimidated by it to ever do that. And that would be the one thing that I would say I'd like to see Duxbury do better than it does right now. It's getting there, but it's getting there very slowly. And what it really needs is somebody to go in and write some user-friendly help files in a way that I don't know. I think it's going to happen slowly, but I don't know if it's ever going to happen completely.
Duxbury, and I don't know what version this came in, but for a while, has had the ability to launch directly from Microsoft Word.
Yes, that came in version 5. And what happens when you install Duxbury, you get something installed called Swift, which is a series of macros that were built into Word to make it possible for you to import files directly from Word into Duxbury. Now, you've always been able to open a file in Duxbury, and if it was a Word document, Duxbury was smart enough to know that it needed to be imported using the Word importer. But the Swift thing allows you to change some of the mapping of Word styles, because remember I said that the word processor importer is intelligent enough to know what styles, so that if you've centered text, it uses one of Duxbury's heading styles. That's all contained in mapping, and you can change all that stuff if you're brave enough to try it. And Swift lets you do stuff like that. But what it also does is install another menu option up on the menu bar of your Word thing, and it's called Duxbury. And the first option in that menu is Duxbury Braille. The next option in it is Embossed Directly, which means that at least in theory, you can be working in your Word document, go to the Duxbury Embossed Directly, and it will just render it in contracted Braille. Now, I would caution you against doing that. Even though the Word importer works most of the time, you still have to be careful and you still have to check things if you expect it to work the way you want it to. And I found a file. In fact, I was just looking for a Word document that I was going to bring with me. I opened it up in Duxbury, translated it, and it turned out there wasn't a single paragraph in the thing. What there was block form with skipped lines between paragraphs, and that ain't standard Braille, folks. And I went back to the Word document, and it looked okay to me. I mean, I didn't see any odd things, but Duxbury was showing not with paragraphs, and I have no idea why it happened, but it's one of the things that does happen. And so if you're looking to get really good Braille, don't use that option. If you just want down and dirty and you don't care what it looks like, fine, do whatever, you know, That's a perfectly good thing to do, and sometimes that's exactly what you want. Again, use it with caution, because sometimes it works real well and sometimes it doesn't. And if you just have to check things. I mean, that's the only thing I can say.
So you're checking this on a Braille display with your fingers before setting it to the embosser?
I did, yeah, because I didn't even want to waste the paper if it wasn't going to work.
Okay.
And as soon as I saw what it was doing, I said, you know what, we're not going to emboss this. But I thought I'd bring it along just as an illustration of why you have to check things, even with all of the importers and all the neat things that now happen that never used to. I will tell you, Duxbury does not import Excel spreadsheets. Don't even think about it. The only way you can do it, if you really want it, well, there's two ways. There's the good way and the bad way. The bad way is to open up your Excel spreadsheet and do a cut and paste, which means, you know, cut it from the Excel sheet and then open up a new document in Duxbury and just paste it in. You're asking for big time trouble if you do that. The better way is to save your Excel document in Word as a Word document and then use the Word importer in Duxbury to import the file that way, and you'll get a better rendering. But keep in mind that most Excel spreadsheets are tables, and tables are difficult at best to read in Braille, so you're probably going to have to do a lot of cleanup at some point. At the very least, you should probably take it out of tabular format and put it into text format, and then even then after that, you're probably going to have to do some cleaning up if you expect it to be reasonably intelligible. The other thing that Duxbury will not do, and I don't know if they're ever going to fix this, and I almost wish they would, is it will not import RTF files. And that is a problem for people who are using BrailleNote and other note takers, because a lot of times the note takers don't save things as real Word documents. They get around the compatibility issue by saving everything as RTF, even if they call it DOC. And Duxbury knows the difference, and it doesn't go by the extensions. It's not a typical Windows program in that respect. It goes by the header information in the file, which is actually the way it should. Microsoft did a goofy thing when they let that all be extension specific. You can fool Microsoft into thinking that an XLS file is a Word document if you want to. I mean, it's you know, brainless enough to let you do it, and then you have to live with the results. But Duxbury is more picky than that. So I hope someday they'll do something so that Duxbury can deal with RTF files, because I think that's a stumbling block for a lot of people.
Well, you import RTF into Word and then export it as a Word document.
Absolutely, and that's what you do. You save it as a Word document. But you see where the confusion comes, that a lot of people think, well, hey, if I open this file that's DOC, it's a DOC file, but it's not. And Word knows the difference, and Duxbury knows the difference, but Windows doesn't, so you click on it, and it just opens it up, and it could be a text file or anything else as long as it's DOC. So the first thing you have to do if you expect Duxbury's Word importer to behave properly is to do a save as, and over in the little box that says file type, make sure that it actually says, and you'll get your first hint of that, because if you do a save as, you'll notice that the file name that you thought was DOC suddenly got changed to RTF. And at that point, you know that you have to tab once to the right and up arrow to make that a real DOC file so that Word will do it correctly.
Do you think that would be a hard thing for him to do?
No, I don't think it would be a hard thing to do at all, really.
It's been a long time I didn't have Word.
Yeah, part of the problem, I think, is this. Duxbury has been struggling with the issue of compatibility for years. They have tried to be compatible to every operating system on the planet. I'll give you an illustration of this. When I was first getting into Duxbury, I had a PC, and I said I wanted to use the CPM version of Duxbury. Oh, no, because at the time I had a CPM machine. And they said, well, we have it on 8.5-inch disks. And I said, well, gee, I don't have an 8.5-inch drive. And they said, well, we can save it in PC format. And I said, that's good enough, because I had something that would convert it. But I was running it on a CPM machine. And they said, well, we don't know if we have it, but we'll check with Joe, because he's probably got one lying around somewhere. And he did, apparently, because they gave it to me. And it turned out I ended up paying, I think, $150 for it, because it was so old. And I knew I wasn't going to get any support, but I didn't really care. I just wanted to have it. For a long time, Duxbury would work on Linux, and it would work on Macintosh, and it would work in PC World, and it would work in CPM. And it might even work on a mainframe if you knew where to look. But they've been finding that it's just too difficult to maintain all of that stuff and make it work across all operating systems seamlessly. And they're starting to get to the point now where they're really narrowing down their focus and just working with Windows. And pretty soon, they are going to drop support for 98. They've already dropped support for Macintosh. And I think once they do that, it will be a lot easier for them to implement some of the features that we would like? Because right now it's just so much work to make it compatible across everything. Again, they're a small company, so they don't have a lot of programmers.
I am really sorry. Again, we couldn't get the embossed set up. Steve, my apologies.
Well, we survived. We survived it all.